This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Russell Dorsey, national MLB insider for Yahoo Sports.
I think Eugenio Suarez is the best bat available. He was my number one player to be moved on my story at Yahoo of the top 26 players that you could potentially see moved at the deadline.
Insider and analyst for Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus.
Player in Luis Robert that I think a lot of us believed would get moved this year. I could imagine you have some teams that are interested and said, I see that dull Luis Robert Jr. over there, and it looks like he's been shining himself up to be moved, and we might be interested in acquiring him.
Russell Dorsey on 670 The Score. The Score.
We go to our Circa Sports hotline. Download the Circa app today. That is where we find our friend Russ Dorsey. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. And the reason we're playing this music is because news is happening. We already have multiple reports of a trade where Austin Slater is going to the Yankees. Adrian Hauser isn't starting today for the White Sox. So we go to our man in the field, Russ Dorsey. What's going on?
What's up, friends? How are we doing?
I mean, we're trying to figure out all these trades or the ones that might happen. And if you had told me that the White Sox would be the ones first on the board today, as we know the trade deadline is tomorrow, I don't think I would have won that bet.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of teams out there that are kind of in the staring contest right now of who's going to blink first. I think if you're the Chicago White Sox, like, they have pieces to be moved. They might not have the most attractive pieces, but they have pieces that are valuable to a team. Like, a guy like Austin Slater, who historically has crushed left-handed pitching, it's really valuable to a playoff team. And so if you said, hey, one of our ancillary pieces is going to get moved on the Wednesday before the deadline, you know what? That makes a lot of sense to me. But a lot of things still could happen over the next 24 to 36 hours until the deadline. And it's an exciting time, even though we haven't seen the major move yet.
Okay, so major move outside of Eugenio Suarez, who, by the way, got hit in the hand. He's back in lineup today. How many teams do you think took a deep sigh of relief after seeing he's back in the lineup today and are still targeting him? And was there a scary moment last night or two nights ago?
I think at least seven teams were breathing very deeply that he was okay after the x-ray came back negative. But yeah, like you heard it on the open, we talked about it last week. Like, I think that's the best bat available, and that's a guy that can change the course of a playoff race. And so to have a guy like that, you know, get hit in the hand days before the deadline, that is not something that you want to see. But thankfully, he is okay and in the lineup.
Also, the Cubs have made it official. Russ, Vidal Brujan designated for assignment, and they recalled Moises Ballesteros. Additionally, right-handed pitcher Porter Hodge has been reinstated from the injured list, but optioned to AAA.
Ooh.
So we know he had struggled in his rehab assignment. It was as we were trying to figure this out. All of this says to me, Russ, that they are putting themselves in a position where they are going to need a reliever between now and when this deadline hits.
And I mean, that was something that I have talked about with you guys for a while. Like, even when their bullpen was going really well, it's like, hey, any good playoff team, a team that expects to go deep in the postseason, you still need to add, you know, quality, high leverage relievers. So there's a lot of quality, high leverage relievers out there. I think the market has changed significantly, and I've written about this for the better part of the last 3 weeks. Like, it's going to be really expensive to get a high leverage arm, because you look at the guys that are available, whether it's Yohan Duran, Griffin Jacks, those guys have years of club control. So you're probably looking at guys like, you know, Orion Helsley, that's going to be a free agent. Peter Fairbanks is a guy down in Tampa with the Rays that is really interesting, that comes with experience and is, when he's on, is one of the better high leverage arms and closers in all of Major League Baseball. So there are high leverage relievers to be had out there. If you're Jed Hoyer and you say, okay, how can we, you know, make the back end of this bullpen really strong? They're guys to go out and acquire, but doesn't mean it's not going to be expensive. And for a team that has some other needs, especially the starting pitching, you know, you want to be sure you can, you know, at least take care of that one first before you go to the other things on your list.
The Twins and Diamondbacks, they have, I think, declared by their moves that they've made already trading away players. But here we are 2 days out, and we were like, well, there'll be more people who declare as sellers. I don't think outside of those two teams anyone else has really declared, correct, Russ?
Right. And I hate that I have to come on here and say, see, we've talked about this before on Raheemy and Harris, but we have. Like, they're, because of that third wild card spot, you have a lot of teams that might think they're not that far away. And so you don't want to go into some deep sell and take yourself not only out of 2024 or 2025, but 2026 as well. Like, I look at a team like the Baltimore Orioles, starting to make some moves, but they're not going to make a ton of moves because Mike Elias has already said, hey, we expect to be competitive and back in the AL East race in 2026. So, you know, I think there are a lot of teams that look at it like that. Like, we're not that far away from being a good baseball team. It just didn't work out here in 2025. So I imagine, you know, the dam breaks later today, early tomorrow. And as we get closer to the deadline, we're going to have that hour to 90 minutes where there's a flurry of moves where you're constantly checking Twitter to see where Player X is going.
I definitely am checking Twitter to see where Player X is going as we bring this segment by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Talking to Russ Dorsey, the Major League Baseball insider for Yahoo Sports, also on Apple TV Plus. And Russ, I think it also just lets you know what teams really value. This is part of a trend that we've seen going back years now, is that a lot of top 10 prospects in baseball outside of, say, perhaps a Kyle Tucker type of trade, and Cam Smith wasn't vaunted that high at the time. But when it comes to teams wanting to part with players who have years of control, knowing that they could bring a lot future-wise at an economic price to their respective ball clubs, I don't think a lot of general managers want to move on them like they have in years past.
Yeah, and I just think the way, you know, baseball has gone the last couple of years, like, the really big-time, earth-shattering moves, outside of what we saw with Rafael Devers this year, which was a unique case, those trades usually happen in the offseason, right? They happen at the winter meetings. They happen at the GM meetings. They happen, you know, at that couple of weeks between the beginning of December and Christmas. And so I don't expect to see a ton of moves like that. And I think when you really sit down and look at the market right now, this just honestly isn't a great year in terms of player availability, right? Like, when you look at what's on the market, Eugenio Suarez is having a monster year. But if I had told you before the season starts that the best player available was going to be Eugenio Suarez, you would say, that doesn't sound great, even though he is, you know, on pace to hit over 50 home runs this year. So I think that's one of the things you have to think about and look at. Each year is different. Each class of players and, you know, market is different. And I think this year you're just seeing a market that, one, was late developing. Two, you have a lot of teams that don't feel like they're bad teams, even though they likely are going to be sellers. And three, yeah, you just don't have the type of market that allows you to make the big splashy move. Like, if I had to tell you what thing is going to be the most valuable over the next 36 hours, I would say it was relief pitching, right? High leverage arms. That's, to me, is the thing where you're going to see the most action because the prices keep going up. I think because of Emmanuel Clase and him being placed on administrative leave, that takes a big name off the market, making the other guys, your David Bednars, your Pete Fairbanks, your Yonder Ron, Griffin Jacks, you know, Ryan Helsley, it increases the price on those guys, which is why, and it's good business. I understand why those teams would say, okay, like, we want a little bit more for these guys than what we might have originally thought about.
I also think that there were times where you saw teams set themselves up for another year. Like what you said, for example, maybe there was a big league player to be had by a team where they don't necessarily think that they're going to be absolute contenders this year, but then they would get that move for like another year ahead. And I think the Orioles would come to mind there, but they have always been prospect minded. Point being, we haven't seen a lot of those either. You know, I feel like in years past, you saw teams make a move where somebody might be available for another year ahead of this, maybe not this season. But given the amount of sellers, I think that that's something that has gone by the wayside too.
I think you're talking about, if I'm not mistaken, the thread the needle trade of, yes, we are selling, but we are acquiring a player in return that we think helps us for our future, usually a major league ready player or a player that was in AAA that probably should be in the big leagues but might be blocked.
Yeah, right? or buying the dip on a big leaguer knowing that they've still got a couple years of control.
For sure. No.
I think he said Luis Robert.
I heard him. Marshall Harris.
What do you think about that, though? I mean, he's a big name when it comes to an option, and I think it's because of this market.
I keep coming back to it, guys, and I know it's going to sound like I'm a hater. I'm really not. I'm really just looking at I knew Marshall. I was going to get Marshall. I knew it. I just look at that $20 million price tag, and you have teams saying, are we acquiring a $20 million player? No. When Luis Robert Jr. signed that deal years ago, you said, okay, at the end of this deal, this guy will be an MVP. This will be a bargain at $20 million. Now it's really not that much of a bargain. Actually, you might be, you know, tying yourself up as far as your payroll goes for a guy who, for the most of the better part of the season, has been a 600 OPS player. Has played better lately, but who is the real Luis Robert Jr.? Because honestly, we look at the last couple of years, he's been closer to being this guy than the guy we saw in 2023.
Let me just tell you something as we talk with Russell Dorsey, who, of course, is the Yahoo Sports National MLB
Russell,
insider.
Not Russ. Russell.
I know.
Luis Robert Jr., what he's saying right now is, get me out of this fun house, this mirror fun house that Andrew Vaughn was stuck in, and then let's see what I do. That's what Luis Robert Jr. is saying right now. But I hear you, Russ. I do want to say this. There is a belief among some people, some who may or may not be within 20 feet of me right now, who believe if the Cubs do not get Eugenio Suarez, they are not going to be World Series contenders. I do not subscribe to that because I think there's plenty of other things the Cubs can do to help themselves, a.k.a. get the best pitching on the market and pair that with another guy who can eat innings, convert Ben Brown into a reliever, go get another reliever. All of a sudden, you've got some swing and miss in your staff.
There was a lot of things mentioned. I say Suarez. Me.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Yes.
As to why Layla believes that if the Cubs don't acquire Eugenio Suarez, that they aren't World Series contenders? Just so I understand how to respond.
I think it has to do with slump timing. Like, at this point, you've seen so many people slump at the same time that you're essentially just trying to figure out who can be the delta offensively, the difference, in order to help ensure that you don't go, say, like they did last night, 1-for-12 with runners in scoring position. You know, can you change the fabric of some of these innings? And I feel like when it comes to available bats on the market, that's the dude.
Okay, I feel you. I think the one thing that I would say is, this isn't the last time the Cubs are going to go in a slump over the next 2 months.
Which
right?
is like, why you have to time them.
I understand that aspect where it's happening against the Milwaukee Brewers, so it's exacerbated a little bit. But the Brewers might go. The Brewers were not playing their best baseball coming into this series. So I think, you know, it's ebbs and flows. I also think you have guys on this roster that are supposed to help get you there, right? Your Kyle Tuckers, you know, Ian hadn't been swinging the bat. No, the way we had seen Ian Happ swing the bat, right? Dansby Swanson, guys like that. Say Suzuki, who had been as good as anybody in the first half of the season. So one player, just bringing Eugenio Suarez isn't going to make those guys hit any better. You're just at a point in your season where, hey, everybody collectively hasn't been swinging the bat. But this is a team that 2 weeks ago we were saying, you know what, World Series caliber offense, and that was with no Eugenio Suarez.
But then I will offer you this. Kyle Tucker has only had 3 extra base hits for the month of July, and why do I feel like Seiya Suzuki's offensive success is a lot tied to his protection? So if that's the case, get him more protection, and that's when you have to bring in a bat like Suarez. The leeway offensively is not a lot when it comes to trying to make a difference in how.
I think we're playing the pick and choose game when it comes to small sample sizes. Because to Marshall's point earlier about Luis Robert Jr. been playing better lately, I could also say Matt Shaw's been swinging the bat as well as we've seen him swing it this year over the last couple of weeks since the All-Star break. And do you you know, mess up that guy's flow and rhythm at the plate, bring in another third baseman where he doesn't play as much.
Okay.
Right? Like, these are questions you got to ask.
Russell, I agree with you there. I am still an advocate of go get Eugenio Suarez. I don't want to be confused.
No, I'm saying. Yeah. I get it.
And I think
just
that gets
offer another perspective.
No, I appreciate that, Russell. That's why I asked the question. I just think that if Craig Counsell has that additional chess piece, he can play a better game of chess with multiple power pieces on the board. It's like having two queens on the board instead of one. I like his ability to be, if he's making the money that they're paying him, to be able to manage that situation and keep guys out of slumps by keeping them rested down the back end of the stretch. What I do want to ask is this, Russ. Based on what's out there, after you look at Suarez, I looked at your top 26 guys. Here's my issue. How can the, externally speaking, how can the Cubs get better offensively if they don't get Eugenio Suarez at this deadline? Or do they just need to really pour into starting pitching and relievers?
I think the most important thing is starting pitching and relievers, right? Like, I after everything we just talked about over the last 7 minutes or so about offense, that's their strength. They're just at a point, you know, where they've hit a little bit of a dip. But the starting pitching and high leverage arms, that's where they really need to focus on. And then once you accomplish that, then you can look around and like, all right, who is a fourth outfielder, fifth infielder that crushes left-handed pitch? Like, look what the Yankees just did with Austin Slater. Like, who is your Austin Slater type of player that doesn't necessarily have to play every day?
Willie Castro?
Yes. I think that's a perfect fit.
Now that Vidal Brujan's out of the way.
I think Willie Castro is one of the best and most underrated players available on this year's market because he can play every position. He hits well from both sides of the plate. Like, that's a dude that's going to be very valuable. And he's, for everybody out there that doesn't know who Willie Castro is, he's the Twins utility man, was All-Star, and you talk about a guy that is built in the Tommy Edman mold, and you see what he's done for the Dodgers in a short time in L.A. Like, that's the type of player you'd be getting with a Willie Castro.
I think that's a very good example of how much one player can make a difference, even when it's somebody you might not necessarily think. When that trade went down last year, Russ, we were all wondering why Tommy Edman was the game changer, not only in the deal of that trade and what was exchanged, but also why the Dodgers valued him so much. To be fair, the Sox did too. But then we saw it play out real time, not just in the playoffs. On the way to getting there, you saw his value.
Correct. And I think when I think when I look back, because I was covering the Dodgers of that playoff run last year, like, Tommy Edman really saved them, because when Mookie Betts moved from shortstop to right field last season, they need, you know, to be a better defensive team. They had Tommy Edman playing shortstop, and then he was playing center field as well. And so to have a guy that can play two premium positions and you have other superstars in your lineup, I think that it is just a big boost. Like, it takes something you don't have to worry about off your plate, and you can just focus on other things. So having those players, like, it's not always about superstars. Like, who are your other very solid players that do things well that help your team win as many games as possible?
Russ Dorsey, this has been a lot of fun, as it always is. We appreciate you joining us here on Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score.
Thanks, Russ.
No problem. Everybody that is following baseball news tomorrow, I'll be on MLB Network. I got to switch it because it's noon to 1. It will be 11 to noon on MLB Network.
Hold on. Is it Rick Hahn on too? Are you guys on together?
I haven't gotten the schedule of who I'm on with, but it might be with former Chicago White Sox GM Rick Hahn. But I'll see.
Wait, since we're into Twitter today, and, you know, again, please don't get caught looking at, like, Super Tough Scene and thinking that's a real account. But as I understand, they have not given him a time yet, but they said the network's going to have 10 straight hours of coverage starting at 8 a.m.
That is true.
So we know that.
No, I'm
for
saying
sure.
What I'm saying is usually I get a schedule, you know, the day before of the times I need to be places, and it usually has the people that you're on with. And so when I get that, I'll see where I fall and then where Rick falls.
Yeah, I was looking for that too, but that's all we got for now. I look forward to seeing who you end up with tomorrow.
Same. Bye, guys.
Bye, Russ.
Put some sleeves on.
That was Russ Dorsey, or as Marshall called him earlier by his full name, Russell Dorsey.
Sometimes you got
to
do that.
Serious.
Sometimes you got to do that. Let him know.
Yeah, you did. That was exactly what that was. As we try to figure out this breaking news that we've already had. Like, for example, we know that Adrian Hauser is not starting for the White Sox today. We know that they've already, according to multiple reports, traded Austin Slater to the Yankees. So we continue to track what is happening as we want more trades to occur leading up to the trade deadline. Doug Glanville, the noted Major League veteran, former show partner for me at NBC Sports Chicago, and also, of course, analyst for ESPN, wonderful baseball voice, is joining us next. We will talk about Ryan Sandberg. We will talk about Doug's thoughts on baseball as well, and more. This is Raheemian Harris on 670 The Score.
I played the game a certain way, that I played the game the way it was supposed to be played. I had too much respect for the game to play it any other way. And if there is a single reason I am here today, it is because of one word, respect.
We appreciate hearing the homages to Ryan Sandberg. This is Raheemian Harris on 670 Scores. We broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we go once again out to our Circus Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. That is where we find our friend Doug Glanville. Always love talking to Doug, the many years Major League outfielder, a former teammate of Rhinos on the 96 and 97 teams, and also, of course, an ESPN analyst and a former colleague of mine at NBC Sports Chicago. Doug, thank you for joining us.
Layla, it's great to see you. Great to talk to you. And yeah, we were teammates, so we know what that's about. So appreciate you.
Well, and I say that. Yeah, Doug, if you want, he's kind enough to join us on Twitch today as well, twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. And we've talked a lot about the culture of baseball. It's a course you also teach at Yale. And I think it is important to note that there is the culture of baseball, you know, as it may be a pop culture definition. But then there's also hearing Ryan Sandberg's speech and knowing what that means to you. When you hear that, what did you think of when he said that, not only at Cooperstown, but just how he personified it?
Well, Ron Sandberg nailed it. And I think it was almost like a long time coming, because he was someone that, you know, kind of kept that in a little bit. You know, he's like a guy that plays the game kind of with a quiet strength, isn't necessarily celebrated at first. And I know that I certainly could relate to the concept that if you're kind of not loud, you're not breaking helmets, you're not throwing things, you're not wearing your heart on your sleeve, you're perceived as, you know, lazy, not caring. And it takes a lot of time to kind of dispel that. And it happened for Ryan Sandberg, because I wrote a piece a long time ago about the connections from Jackie Robinson to my career through degrees of separation. And it flowed through Bill Buckner and Ryan Sandberg. And of course, Sandberg was my teammate. And he learned from Buckner about preparation, about intensity, about focus. But along the way, when he was in the minor leagues, one of his coaches said, you know what, you need to break a helmet once in a while. You need to do something, right? So he breaks his helmet. And just like Ryan Sandberg, you can imagine, he says, great, I don't have a helmet now, but I proved I can break one, right? So, you know, it just wasn't his thing. And it took a while to come into his own to realize that he was playing the game in a way that is right, because everybody has their approach, their strength. They're important to a team. You need the rah-rah guys. You need the guys who break helmets. You need guys that are quiet. You need thinkers. You need everything for a whole team to be successful. And at different times, they carry the team. Well, Ryan Sandberg carried the game ultimately on his back. I mean, he got the last laugh, because the critics that said that he didn't care, he's too quiet, it's like, okay, I'm going to do that all the way to Cooperstown. And so I think he nailed just understanding that he respected the game and he played it a certain way, that it wasn't about him. It was about the game and his teammates. And he was obviously successful at it.
Doug, thanks for joining us. Our condolences to you and everyone who, of course, has been hit hard by this loss. I was really curious, because we don't always get what we call here backstage access to what people are like when they're not in front of the fans and when they're not at the plate, in the field, in the spotlight, so to speak. So I was wondering if you could give us a peek into what it was like being Ryan's teammate Because as I understand it, and this is from conversations I've had both on and off the air with Sarge, Gary Matthews, is like, this guy was a real jokester, a prankster. And I wonder if you have ever been a victim of any of his pranks or have seen any of these pranks executed.
Oh, like a hot foot type of guy. Yeah, he was a hot foot kind of guy, you know. I think Sandberg, well, the thing that I think about is he was my teammate way before it was supposed to happen because he broke his hand. I think it was 1993. And he came down to Daytona Beach when I was just coming up in the minors. It was like my second full season. And he didn't say a word. He's on his rehab assignment. I think he was there for a few days. And he didn't say hardly anything. But you just watch him work. And you're just like, wow, this guy just like he's hitting off the tee. He's doing all his drills. And, you know, here's a major league MVP back in the minors. And he felt like we were equals, right? He didn't have carry this sort of chip on his shoulder. He was very approachable and just said a couple of words here and there, and it was enough. So I kind of got that sense of like the introspective side. Now, the beginning of my career, Major League, years one and two, were Rhino's last two. So it was a different state. But I used to love how he would slip in like a sentence in Spanish out of nowhere, right? He'd jump in a conversation with players from Latin America, and he'd go, ¿Quién? He would just jump. I was like, oh, he understands. So he always like would slide in stuff, just like these kind of dry humor one-liners with that wry smile. And you knew he was, could be up to something just as much. But I was not like, quote, a victim. I was like the rookie that didn't know what he was doing. So he was kind of spared me because he wasn't going to haze you and stuff like that. He just spared me. It was mostly him getting on other players, other kind of peers at his level. And I'll give you one example, like Mark Grace, and you got to bring him on if you haven't already. So Gracie, I remember one spring training, we were playing a game in like Tucson or something, and we're about to leave. And, you know, all the autograph seekers are there and it's this mob. And Sandberg's up there signing, Grace is signing. And Sandberg, you know, he could actually get away from the crowd without them being mad at him. So there was different times like this day where he just kind of walked and he had this wave, like kind of like the parade wave, and he would point to them and they'd like, oh, he's looking at me. And then he'd keep walking. Right. You know, if he was busy. Right. So Gracie would be up there signing, sweating, you know, and then he'd sign like 700. And then the 701st person would be like, oh, Gracie, you're terrible. And Gracie would be like, you see, Sandberg could just wave and walk away. He just knew how to do it. And then I'd get booed because I finally stopped after an hour. And just like you couldn't say anything to Rhino. He just had that presence where if he was looking at you, you're like, you were frozen. And then you didn't realize like he might have just kept walking or, you know, went about his business. So he was funny like that, and he just kind of knew how to just slip it in really under the radar.
We're talking to Doug Glanville, the man of many talents, also the co-host of the Starkville podcast. And Doug launched a Substack. I'm excited about this. A newsletter on Substack where he shares stories about the game of baseball, like what we're doing now, and its profound impact on the world. It is called Welcome to Glanville, which I think is great. DougGlanville.substack.com, which also includes your recent piece on Ryan Sandberg. Can you give us a preview of what you made note of there and just you know, your impressions of in written form about what people can expect?
Yeah, well, you know, I wrote a piece a month ago, just sort of, it was a moment where I was like, I got to do something. You know, I didn't know about how imminent it was, but I justly felt like compelled to do something. And I remember I saw Larry Boa at one point and Boa was really upset. You know, it was before a game and he's like, I don't know, you know, I haven't heard from Rhino and you know, you got to find out. I think something's changed, you know, and he was right. He was right. And so I just felt like I got to write something. And it was like, I got the gold text message from Rhino and Margaret after he read the piece. So I was so happy that it was a tribute to him. But I really did underscore about what Ryan Sandberg meant to me. And the fact that I was that guy that was quiet and kind of went about his business and took a lot of criticism of not caring, of being lackadaisical. I went through that. And I remember that interview I mentioned earlier where I got him to explain that he tried to be different because he was getting this criticism. And then he said, I just have to be me. And I say the most powerful mentorship and lesson you could give any player, younger player, is that it's enough to be yourself. I mean, it's simple, but it can be so difficult because you're trying to impress and it's going a million miles an hour, and you need veterans like Ryan Sandberg to slow it down for you and get perspective. And the big leagues kind of gives you a little more bandwidth to be yourself, quirky, whatever it is. But I think with Rhino is really specific for me, that I could be quiet and bring a storm. I could be quiet and hit lasers off of Stan Belinda, you know, and I watched this guy work. And, you know, I remember one game, I stole a couple bases. I got on and it was Carlos Perez of the Expos, and he hit home runs. Like, I think he might have hit two that day. And, you know, and Rhino didn't say much. So after the game, we're like high-fiving. And he says to me, "Is that a baby Glenn? You get on, I drive him in." So it's like, that's it. Like, that's all you need from a guy that, by the way, was in my Strat-O-Matic baseball set and my baseball cards, and I played wiffle ball imitating this guy. He was one of my favorite players. And, you know, so it was like surreal to see him as a teammate. And so I'm writing another piece that I'm going to post today, just about a little more bird's eye view. But the idea is that what's so devastating about losing Ryan Sandberg personally is not just that he was a friend and a teammate, and I gained access to his family and his openness, but it was also that in baseball, because our experiences are so layered, because we're at a game and you're sitting there going, well, my manager is Ryan Sandberg, my teammate's this guy I grew up watching, the GM, the front office, you know, you can't get your mind around that every generation of baseball pays it forward and is in the same room, pulling in the modern game all the time. I mean, I went to San Francisco and I saw Pat Burrell, Chili Davis, Dusty Baker, Bob Melvin. I was like, wait a minute, this is like every day, it's a family reunion. And I wanted to express that when you have Ryan Sandberg, who starts off, I'm a fan, he's an icon, he's a Hall of Famer, he's a teammate, he's a friend. When you lose him, you lose all of that. You lose all of it. You don't lose just that kind of little piece of, like, which is still significant, of like a friend, let's say. You lose all of it. And so, and when you, as he said, he played it the right way, now baseball loses all of it. So it is consequential losing Ryan Sandberg, because you question the game. You start over. And I think we have a duty to kind of keep everything going in the way that he set that example.
Such profound words, Doug. You always do such a wonderful job when it comes to that, but today especially. Doug, thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks so much, Doug.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
And like we mentioned, Doug has a Substack, Welcome to Glanville. He has the other play on words with his podcast, the Starkville Podcast, and former teammate, as we know, of Ryan Sandberg, and also an ESPN analyst. Doug, thanks again for joining us. We have more to come here on Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. Is it in? Can we tell him? It is. All right. Caleb Williams spoke at Bears training camp today over at Halas Hall. We'll bring you the latest as you listen to Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score and the Odyssey and iHeart radio apps.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
He is so much more comfortable right now, even yesterday, the walkthrough yesterday, just in terms of moving around. You know, we go from gun to under to the tight ends are moving, the receivers are moving. We're adding a few more every single day. And his process is really clean right now. I'm talking about how he's preparing. I'm really pleased with it. He's doing the work behind the scenes that no one else is seeing. And we're starting to see the dividends being paid from it.
That is Ben Johnson talking about his QB1, Caleb Williams. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score. And Caleb Williams spoke today at practice, which is a good thing. I also still think that Caleb Williams making mistakes in practice is a good thing, because Ben Johnson said it, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I think that goes for all of us.
Clearly it goes for everyone who's paying attention to what's going on, because I don't think anyone's comfortable with where Caleb Williams is right now. So I think everyone, including observers, have to get comfortable getting uncomfortable.
Right, because this is an omelet. And even though eggs are $25 a carton or whatever it is now, point being, you still have to break them.
It's so funny you called it an omelet, because watching practice on Saturday, I was with Clay Harbor and we were talking about what we were seeing in front of us, in front of our eyes. Just, I was like, why is it that when I see Caleb dropping back, doing his thing, does he look like scrambled eggs? But then I see Tyson Bagent drop back and do things, it's a nicely folded omelet. I was like,
Tyson,
I know.
Bagent is a nicely folded omelet in this metaphor?
He really was. Well, he's going up against the twos. So that's a lot of it. But I'm just saying, everything was very crisp with Tyson Bagent on the field. And with Caleb, it was like, what is going on?
Every Bob just said, hell yeah.
No, but I put it into context. He's going up against the twos, so it's a lot easier.
You know, I feel like we've gotten a different set of Bobs recently. Like, I've gotten some really nice messages randomly from Bobs. I feel like we've kind of...
Was that the Pope?
No, those are Roberts.
I wish. If that happened, I'd probably run around like crazy with my hands in the air. But there have... I feel like our Bobs have diversified a bit. It's just a sample size. I'm not sure.
What about thanks?
You know what? A valid question today, and we're going to ask a variation of it in five on it in our next segment.
Here we go.
But in the meantime, you don't act like you're not watching this too. That's a tease. That's the next segment. Yes. But let's give you what we know from Caleb Williams. By the way, our coverage here on The Score is brought to you by Chevy, and Chevy drives Chicago. And the number one draft pick, as you know, not Caleb Williams, the Chevy Silverado. It's for fetching. It's for toting. It's for getting around. It can do a lot of things. That's why it is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. So let's listen to Caleb Williams, who spoke just a few moments ago to Alizal about what he has been learning about the offense.
I think as of right now, I think I'm rolling. I'm pretty smooth with it as of right now. Obviously, you want to be 100% when you're out there with the calls and hearing it and making sure. There's so many words that we have in our playbook, and you put so many words together that sometimes they kind of sound the same. So just when you hear a play, you start to hear the play. It's like, okay, I know what the play is. I know exactly what we have. So it comes down to just a little bit more studying. Comes down to a little bit more practicing. A lot more reps and things like that over time. So, I think that's where it is. I think that's where, it's at right now. And, we're going to keep progressing. I'm going to keep progressing and getting after
it. Again, I, at this point, am still just listening for some real big red flags. I don't hear any. I hear a guy who understands that this is a process.
That is the exact word I was about to use, Lila. What I heard in that sound that we just heard from Caleb Williams as we talk about his acclimating to Ben Johnson and his offense, which is also a work in progress, it is a process, and he is taking the steps necessary to get through the process. And I think everybody can just be okay with that.
I also think that it is a good thing to have mistakes at this time when your head coach can stop the play. Like, maybe there's a mental process there where you might get down on yourself because your standard is so high that even in practice, you don't want to make those mistakes. And your coach is like, nah, here's why it's good. Or X, stop the play. Like, here's why Y didn't work. There are all these advantages to being able to have setbacks now and have it have a positive outcome later.
My favorite quote from Mike Tomlin of all time is the standard is the standard. I think Ben Johnson has an impossible standard. And I think that's great because that means no matter how well you do, there will always be room for improvement.
And what's the difference going to be between practice and the actual game? Yeah, that for me is so much of this too, and that's why I'm okay with this all. Yeah, I'm okay with hearing about if he struggled in training camp because good. That's what you have to do sometimes to get better, and I would much rather have him playing with that kind of process than the alternative where maybe every play you run is simple and nice, but you don't need it to look good here. Williams continued. He also talked about the workload of that very idea. Learning the installation of what the Bears are trying to do.
It's different. It's going to be different every year. Next year, I'll be handling more. Next year, I'll be handling more. Year after that, I'll be handling more. I think that's where it's at right now. We're installing a bunch. They're putting they've installed a lot OTAs now, and they're just seeing how much I can retain, and I take pride in trying to retain it all, every single detail that we have, and I think that's where I've been growing. Since Ben's been here, is retaining all the information. All of it makes sense to me, and being able to go out there and execute. Obviously, there's going to be mistakes, but being able to understand that it was a mistake that by me, or we lined up wrong, or the whatever the case may be, getting back in the huddle, calling it right, getting back out there, doing it, executing. Being a player-led team.
Limit the mistakes. And more important than limit the mistakes is understanding you will make mistakes. Just don't be making the same mistake over and over. That's the key here to learning something brand new. We've all done it, right? And I think one of the most important things I've heard in this training camp is what Ben Johnson talked about the other day, not his most recent time talking, but where he talked about what he learned in year one, Caleb Williams, that could carry over into year two. Didn't sound like much. Sounds like this is a fresh slate. And Ben Johnson's more than content with understanding that for all intents and purposes, this is like a second rookie year for Caleb Williams. And if he's okay with it, the head coach, and understands that, and that's the prism through which he's working, then Caleb Williams has to understand it as well. And now they're working together to get him up to speed in Ben Johnson's offense.
I'm breaking rules today. This is a big one for me.
Oh, what's that rule?
His performance time, his performance, whether it was under center or out of the shotgun. So we understand that there is some under center stuff that is happening. I want to hear what Caleb Williams had to say about playing under center.
There hasn't really been a challenge for me under center. I know that's been a big thing. But, you know, there hasn't really been a challenge. It's just been, you know, gaining the knowledge, you know, how, you know, the footwork, where we need to be, the landmarks of the running back, the landmark for me, you know, when I set up or when I, you know, when I'm rolling out or anything like that. So it's just been, you know, practicing the technique. And so what I like about it, you know, you get, you know, hard sell actions, backers biting, safety's eyes get, you know, crisscrossed with different motions and things like that. And, you know, it provides, you know, the defense actually identifies it differently from when you're a gun, back offset and things like that. So it's a bunch of small, minute things that end up mattering. And, you know, you end up having guys running free or you end up having great leverage on the safety or things like that. So it's, you know, it's helpful. You know, it's going to be a part of us for a long time.
Understanding that he's selling the tells for the defense is a big thing for me because that's really how this works. Because you go back to Ben Johnson explaining how he wants everything to look different but the same and everything that encompasses, it sounds like he's fully bought in and understands why it's so important that he's just as effective under center as he has been in his much more familiar role of out of the shotgun.
I'll believe that it's not a problem for him when I see it in a game. Like, I appreciate that he's going to communicate that and say that. And then he went into why he's okay with that process, and that's a good part of this. But as far as whether or not it's an issue, the tape showed it was previously. I appreciate him telling us how it's going to be different, but I can't be in the same place as he is when it comes to it not being a problem.
I have to believe he's been working on that all season, understanding that this was coming. So that's what I lean into when he says it's big. Like the way he admitted it off the top, I think there's been a recognition there that you hope translates into better performance on the field, as you said, once it actually happens in the game.
Agreed. We have more to come here on Rahimian Harris on 670 The Score coming up next. As we get you ready for Cubs baseball, we'll get you a lineup as they get ready for their third and mercifully final game against the Brewers in Milwaukee this
Not
series.
Not mercifully.
Five on It is coming up next. We have five sports questions and some news earlier today that you probably are going to be interested in regarding the trade deadline. That's next.